The following previews are of graphic audio productions rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
The danger is real.
Can't breathe.
The threat is vast.
New York, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Dallas, Washington. We surrender or else millions of Americans die. That's what we face.
The conspiracy spreads.
We have every kind of creep, and they're all in on this Hydra operation. With the information they've given us, we have identified bases in Nicaragua and Florida.
And the only thing that can stop it are the combined forces of Able Team, Phoenix Force, and Matt Bolin. Stony Man. The legend of Stony Man begins.
See? You got your backup, Carl.
Don't use my name, all right? Standard nicknames, fellas. Politician, gadgets.
And what's your name?
Iron Man. It's time to go to work.
December 2007.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
What exactly did you whisk me here for, Sirian?
Fair enough question. Permit me to answer with one. How would you like to save the world?
At the request of world-famous rock star and global humanitarian Sir Ian Moran, Anya Creed is flown to the jungles of Brazil to seek the secrets of a legendary lost civilization.
We're trying to track down reports that there might be a settlement derived from a quilombo far up the Amazon, which has declined to join Brazil, or perhaps the modern world.
Do you think that's really possible in today's world? With airplanes and satellites and everywhere? Wouldn't it turn up on Google Earth?
We aim to find out.
As Anya's journey takes her up the Amazon and into the nightmare world of the rainforest, the lines between reality and fantasy become more and more blurred, and the denizens of the jungle get more and more dangerous.
Hostile! Open fire! Open fire!
This is a bad place. We better pray your man Moran gets plenty of reinforcements into us pretty quick, like he said he would.
Unwittingly, Anya finds herself embroiled in an international struggle for technology, power, and even immortality. But who is the enemy, and who the ally?
You have been misled, lied to at every turn.
Even now, if you look deep into your heart, you can see the truth.
You've put the power of the ages into these hands.
I have capabilities you've never dreamed of.
So have I, my dear.
Oh!
Rogue Angel Number 8, Secrets of the Slaves.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
And now, for our feature presentation.
Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
He loved it. Loved the look on their faces. Loved the fear in their eyes. All he had to do was walk past them, the delightfully whippy split bamboo flail in his hand, and they cringed, knowing they might be the target, knowing they would indeed be the target. This time, next time, sooner or later, the flail would seek their flesh. Oh, how fine it was, the flail. He'd had it for years. Intended to have it always. When first he found it, the flail was the color of pale sun-washed sand, a light tan tinged with yellow. But that was long years ago. Now the slender, springy sections carried a lovely varnish-like patina, the color of a golden sunset with an underlying shade of red. Very appropriate, the red, for it was put there by the frequent and copious application of blood. The blood of cowering men. He liked the sound and the feel and the sight of the bamboo stinging their flesh, splitting it open, bringing the blood until their backs ran red with it, until the flail took on its color. Even more than the blood of men, he reveled in the blood of women, terrified women, screaming women. It was an odd fact, he mused. When he cut men with the precious flail, they hunkered down in fear or stood boldly in defiance. But either way, they were almost always silent when the welts were raised and the flesh split apart. Women, though, the women screamed. They begged. They wept loud and bitterly. They asked for mercy. The flail had no mercy, nor did he. Case Wilhelm smiled as he passed among them. He held the wonderful 4.5-foot-long flail lightly in one hand, while he looked, while he chose, while he decided which of them would provide an example for the others to learn by.
Ah, yes, that one.
Wilhelm's smile became wider as he altered his direction and took a firmer grip on the flail. He began to tremble with anticipation. The flail, the power, was his. The only thing that could make this better would be if he had a woman to castigate and to educate. He liked them the best. But at the moment, all he owned were men. That man, however, would do. He would do nicely. Case walked faster, the flail rising and falling with the pumping of his arm. He raised his hand, the flail poised above the chained man.
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's Blood Bond. Narrated by Thomas Penny. With performances by Dylan Lynch, James Lewis, Michael Glenn, David Coyne, Nanette Savard, Colleen Delaney, James Konacek, Jeff Baker, Terrence Aselford, Richard Rowan, Ken Jackson, Christopher Graybill, and Mort Shelby. Blood Bond Number 6, Slaughter Trail.
A race is a square.
If we do that, we will get fined.
So they fine us $1 each. So what? Let's make that the wager. Loser pays both fines. How does that sound?
Excellent. And for you, I will make it simple. Go ahead without me. You win. I'll pay your $1. How's that?
You're no fun today.
What I am is tired. Fortunately, I know how to cure that. When we get to the hotel, I'm going to take a bath, have a meal served at a table, and then go to bed. Wake me in about 2 days. Then I'll think about a race, if you still want to. A foot race, though. These horses are probably as tired as we are.
You always win those.
Why do you think I want it to be a foot race, brother?
Matt shook his head and held his horse to a walk. Sam was probably right. The horses were too tired from travel to be forced into a run through the narrow lanes and few thoroughfares of Santa Fe. For more than a year, the two, brothers by choice rather than birth, had been drifting, for the time being simply enjoying their youth and their freedom. Soon enough, they would tire of exploration and settle down on the ranch land they owned in Wyoming. But that time was not yet. At the moment, they were happy wanderers, enjoying the country, enjoying meeting strangers and making friends of them, enjoying each other's company. Matt Bodine was the son of a Wyoming rancher, Sam Two Wolves, the child of a powerful Cheyenne chief and a highly educated woman from a wealthy New England family. Matt and Sam had been as close as brothers ever since the long-ago day when, as boys, Matt saved Sam's life Matt was ceremoniously made a blood brother of the young Cheyenne and accepted into the tribe as if he were one of them. Matt was educated at home by his mother, a former teacher, while Sam went east to attend college. When Sam returned to Wyoming, the two resumed their close friendship as if there had never been a separation. The boys, now men, even looked alike, each standing over 6 feet tall and with a large, powerful frame. Matt had brown hair and blue eyes, while Sam's hair and eyes were black, but otherwise, they could well be mistaken for brothers by birth. They also happened to be exceptionally gifted shootists, adept with their Colt revolvers, both as to speed and accuracy. Matt might have been a hair quicker with a gun, Sam slightly more accurate. Between them, they were a formidable fighting machine. Or could have been. They were much more interested in enjoying life than in furthering the reputation that was already spreading about them. At this moment, they were returning to Santa Fe, which was one of their favorite stops in their travels. When chance took them near Santa Fe, they generally managed to find some excuse to stay a few nights at La Fonda, the handsome hotel on the public square just a few steps away from the governor's palace. The narrow lanes wound past walled adobe houses and dusty pens, doing a haphazard job of containing goats and donkeys, chickens and ducks. Eventually, the two men broke out into the broad wagon road that was the end of the fabled Santa Fe Trail. They followed that into the heart of the city and tied their horses at the hitching rings outside the fine old hotel. One thing they could be very sure of was that they liked La Fonda and looked forward to their stays there. The clerk at the little office cubicle in the lobby recognized them when they entered. He began to smile in welcome.
Hola, young gentleman. Will you be wanting the same rooms as before?
That sounds just fine, Jose. And some hot bath water as quick as you can get it up there.
Of course, Mr. Bodine, Mr. Wolf. Welcome!
Jose never had quite gotten a handle on Sam's name for some reason. He turned and motioned to a boy who quickly darted near and relieved both Matt and Sam of their saddlebags and bedrolls. Another youngster was dispatched to see to the needs of their horses, and a platoon of bellboys hurried away to fetch tubs and buckets of hot water for the baths.
A fella sure can feel pampered around here.
Do you mind being pampered?
Not me. I was only making note of it, not complaining. No, sir, they can pamper me all they please and probably then some. I'll suffer through it in silence.
That's what I like about you, Matt. You are so brave.
Yeah, I kind of think I am too.
The two collected the keys to their adjoining rooms and turned toward the stairs.
Oh, wait, please. One moment, I almost forgot.
Jose disappeared into the hotel office. He was gone for only a minute. When he returned, he was carrying a soiled and much-traveled envelope. He handed the envelope to Sam, who happened to be standing closer to him.
This came addressed to either one of you gentlemen. It has been here for more than a month, I think. Maybe two. Eh? Maybe longer.
Mail? Who would be sending mail to us? And how would they know where to find us?
From all the chicken scratchings and postmarks on this envelope, I'd say that it went to your father first and he forwarded it. It looks as though it's made several stops since then.
Well, don't just stand there. Open it.
In the room. I want to get these boots off and sit down on something that isn't moving for a change. We'll open it there.
Want me to read it to you?
No, thanks. It always bothers me how your lips move when you read.
Hurry it up then, will you? My curiosity's up.
Keep your britches on, white boy. Remember that patience is a virtue.
I never claim to have any virtues. Now hurry it up, damn you.
Oh my gosh. I almost forgot about this fellow. But then you always knew him better than I did.
Who?
Pete. Pete Branville. Remember him?
Of course I do.
When Matt and Sam were boys, still learning the ways of each other's culture, Peter Branville was a cowboy working on Matt's father's ranch. A laughing, happy-go-lucky youngster in his early to middle 20s, probably not far then from the age Matt and Sam were now. He took the two boys under his wing and contributed to their education, teaching them the finer points of roping, and if the truth be known, teaching them to enjoy the taste of beer as well.
I haven't thought about Pete in years. How about you?
He worked for my dad just 2 seasons. I looked for him coming hiring time the next year, but he never showed. Never wrote to me either.
I got one letter from him after I went back east to school. He was encouraging me, said I could make it in the white man's world if I didn't have a chip on my shoulder. My mother had already told me that, of course. I always kind of wondered if she put Pete up to sending that letter.
She could have. He rode with me a time or two when I went over to visit with your folks. So why is he writing now? And how did he find you?
Us. It's addressed to both of us.
Then why are you reading it?
Because I'm the one with the college education. Now, be quiet and let me look at this, will you? Heard about your reputation with a gun. Heard you helped some folks up to Colorado one time. I want to hire you. Cannot pay that much, but I need help. I am married now with a little boy and another coming. Got a place southwest from Nogales in Sonora State, town called San Iba. I need help. Your friend, Peter James Branville. This was mailed more than 2 months ago.
I wonder if he still needs help.
So what do you think?
You know good and well what I think. I'm thinking the same thing you are.
We've already gotten rooms and it's getting too late to travel today. I say we have those baths and a good sleep. Then we'll ride out again at first light tomorrow.
Just what I was thinking, too. Now all we need are those bellboys with the tubs and the hot water.
The two were sitting beside a very small fire at the foot of a low, rugged mountain northeast of Tucson. The comforts of La Fonda seemed very far away. Their supper had been stick bread and bacon, both roasted over the flames. The coffee was starting to boil now, its aroma spreading to the pine-scented night air.
I need a bath.
I agree with that statement.
You're one to talk.
I would argue the point, except that it is true. We both need baths.
I sure enjoyed that bath I had back in Santa Fe.
It seems a long time ago, doesn't it?
Matt's head came up, his eyes flashing.
Uh-oh.
Stay here.
Matt nodded, but by then Sam Two Wolves had already disappeared into the night, going as silently and as quickly as if he were evaporating on the moving breeze. Matt reached for the coffee pot, poured himself a cup, and rocked back on his heels with the cup held under his chin so he could best enjoy the smell of it in anticipation of the flavor.
Got enough here to share if you care to come out of that brush and sit with me.
After a few moments, a man wearing ragged clothing pushed his way into view, bullying his way through a clump of scrub brush. The man needed a shave and the services of a seamstress, but there was nothing unkempt about the carbine he held, aimed in Matt's direction. The weapon looked clean and properly cared for. Matt motioned for the fellow to help himself to the coffee.
I only have one spare cup.
Only need one.
What about your partners there?
I'm alone.
Mister, there are three of you. You right there, another fellow standing right over there, and the third gent is crouched down beside that rock yonder where he likely thinks I can't see him.
You got good eyes.
Good ears, too. You three make as much noise in the woods as a bunch of bull elk in the rutting season. I heard you coming 5 minutes ago. You really ought to put that gun down and have some coffee. It's a mighty good pot if I do say so.
We didn't come for no coffee.
The visitor lifted the muzzle of the carbine menacingly. He looked a little disappointed to see that Matt did not seem particularly menaced.
Suit yourself, but it's good coffee.
Quit stalling. You know what we want.
Matt reached up with his left hand and tipped his hat back, then transferred the coffee cup to that hand. He took another sip and set the cup down beside the fire.
Don't stand up. Don't reach for that gun. Don't do nothing. Just give it up. Everything. Drop the gun belt, empty your pockets, and step back. We'll be taking what we want and then moving along. Don't give us no trouble. You'll still be alive when we leave here.
Yes, I can see that I will still be alive. But will you?
What? Mister, what are you talking about?
I'm talking about you and your partners. I've offered you coffee, nice and friendly. Now I'm offering to let the three of you go.
Let us go? Bob, you're the one's got three guns pointed at you right now.
Two.
What?
Two guns. You and your partners are down to two guns now. My brother's already disarmed the one by the rock there. He would have been the hardest to get led into, so he had to go first. Thing I don't know is whether he's just knocked out or if it was better to kill him. That would have depended on how things looked when my brother reached him. If he had a protected position there, he likely had to be killed. But I'm not sure about that. We'll find out directly, won't we?
Brother? What brother?
The one you didn't see when you were trying to sneak up on us?
You're bluffing.
Actually, mister, I am not. And if you push this thing, I'll have no choice but to shoot you. My brother will shoot that other fellow over there.
I am standing here with the rifle gun aimed at your belly from a distance of 10 feet, and you're squatting there with nothing but a cup of coffee in your hands. And you say you're gonna shoot me?
That's right. That carbine of yours is not cocked. Before you can pull that hammer back and trigger a shot, I'll have lead in you.
Nobody is that fast.
I am.
You can't. Jerry? Answer me, Jerry!
Jerry's the one by the rock?
Jerry!
Put your gun down. You can still have that coffee and be on about your business. Whatever it is.
The would-be robber's eyes went wide, and the skin at his temples tightened and pulled back. Matt could see it coming. But he had no power to change anything, and no choice. The fellow's thumb rolled back on the hammer of his saddle carbine.
You all right?
Yeah, you?
He must have had his finger on the trigger. Jerked it when my bullet hit him.
It's a shame they didn't settle for the coffee.
The welcome aroma of boiled coffee had been replaced now by the sharp brimstone scent of burnt gunpowder.
You make terrible coffee, Matt. But even I admit that it isn't so bad that a man should die to avoid having to drink it.
Funny. Better check on the horses while you're out there.
Right.
Matt walked over to the dead man and retrieved the rifle he carried. Might come in handy.
Sam?
I'm all right.
Sam came back into the firelight.
Bad news.
What's that?
The shot that fellow fired. It clipped your horse's nighthawk. The bone was shattered. I had to put him down.
Damn! He was a good horse.
More to the point, he was half of our transportation. I can't carry you double all the way into Mexico, and Pete's letter was worrisome. It has already been several months since he mailed it. It sounded to me like he needed help fast.
Tell you what, we'll ride double until we get down to the road. I'm fairly sure there's a coach service along there. You can drop me beside the road and you get on down to San Iba. I'll catch a ride into Tucson by a horse there and follow just as soon as I can.
That could put you a couple of days behind me.
If you have a better idea, I'll be glad to hear it.
No. Under the circumstances, I suppose it would be best.
Come on, then. Let's drag those fellas clear of the camp. In the morning, we can take a few minutes to cover them with rocks and brush, or maybe find a slope where we can spill some loose gravel down on them. We'll read over them before we go.
Sam nodded, then hunkered down beside their dying fire and reached for both the cup he had abandoned there and the pot of coffee that Matt had made. Very good coffee, despite Sam's complaints. Matt had begun to think he was wrong about finding traffic on this road. The sun had already passed its zenith and was sliding down toward the western horizon before someone finally came along. And then it was not the public coach he'd been expecting, but a rattling buckboard with a woman and two small boys in it. He had started walking toward that distant horizon several hours earlier and was dusty and footsore. He set his gear down and stepped out into the road so the lady would have little choice but to either stop her team or run him over. She looked at first like she would elect to trample him under the feet of her two browns, but at the last moment she pulled them to a halt. Matt touched the brim of his hat respectfully, then took it off and held it in both hands. He smiled, one of his 24-carat smiles that was pretty much guaranteed to melt the heart of any young lady, even a married one such as this.
Ma'am, I'm surely glad to see you. I wonder, could you give me a ride to the nearest settlement? I'm afraid I've lost my horse.
She looked nervous, so he pointed to his gear piled beside the twin tracks of the road.
Body just hasn't any notion how much stuff he's carrying until he's the one carrying it himself.
When even that didn't appear to sway her, he ratcheted up the intensity of the smile another notch or two.
I'd be happy to pay for your time and trouble, ma'am.
The older boy, who looked to be 9 or 10, nudged his mom's elbow and whispered something to her. The lady's expression did not soften, but her posture did. A little.
It would shame me to ask payment for a simple kindness.
You never asked for anything, ma'am. I offered.
It'd
be a true kindness. I'm a stranger in need.
Well...
Please, Mama. He said he'd pay. How much you gonna pay, mister?
Well, I don't know. How far is it to town?
Oh, it's pretty darn far.
Jason, it is not.
The lady looked at Matt.
It is only a few more miles, really.
My feet tell me that's a few miles I'd rather not walk. I'll pay you anything within reason, ma'am, and be glad for your help.
Then put your things in the back and get on. You can let the tailgate down and set on that if you'd like.
That would keep him as far away from her and her boys as it was possible for him to get and still be riding. He took no offense. She did not know him from Adam.
Thank you, ma'am.
Matt tugged his hat on and hurried to his saddle, bedroll, and saddlebags. The springy boards at the back end of the little wagon would have made a splendid diving board for jumping into the swimming hole back home. But every time the rig hit a good bump, Matt felt like he was going to be thrown off. He would have felt considerably better if he had something to wrap his legs around and dig his spurs into. The lady had been telling the truth about the distance, though. A small town, not Tucson, but some outlying community, came into view within 5 miles or so. Matt swiveled halfway around so he could get a look at the place as they approached it. The town was small, drab, dingy, and weather-worn. All in all, Matt felt, it would be a fine place to be from. Far from. Still, if there was a horse here that he could buy, he would be grateful. He wanted to get started after Sam Two Wolves at first light, if possible. He spotted a large barn at the near edge of town that was probably a livery barn. If so, there was a good chance his transportation problem could be resolved before supper. He turned further around.
Ma'am, you could drop me.
No!
Before Matt could finish the sentence, the two riders came pounding out from behind the livery. The older child, who would scarcely have stood waist-high on either rider even if the newcomers had been afoot, jumped to his feet and lifted his little fists like he was ready to do battle. With both of them at once.
Move aside! Jason, you sit down. At once, do you hear me? And not a peep out of you either, Derek. Mr. Voss, Mr. Trudell, I will thank you to move out of my way. At once, if you please.
And what if we don't please?
The larger of the two men was probably in his mid-30s, heavily muscled, although with a telltale bulge above his belt that suggested soft living and easy work. The gun tied down on his left thigh hinted at the sort of work that might be. His partner was a few years younger and a little leaner. He too wore a revolver like he fancied himself a top hand with a gun. The holster was held down with a strap and buckle instead of a plain thong, and the leather showed fancy tooling. Matt suspected a gun belt like that would set a man back a month's wages or more. Both wore their hat brims tugged low, and neither offered the common courtesy of tipping those hats to the lady.
Mr. Dwight wants you to sign that paper he gave you, Delia. He said I'm to bring it back with your mark on it, or he'll know the reason why.
Delia set her lips in a thin line and nodded her head, the movement abrupt and unequivocal.
The reason there will be no signature is because I am not selling. Not now, not ever, and not at any price he could come up with. Now I shall ask you again, Mr. Voss, move aside. I have business in town.
Oh, going to the bank, are you? They won't loan you no more money. I can tell you that right now, Delia. You got no choice. You're through here. With or without that signature, Mr. Dwight intends to have that miserable little place of yours. So you might as well take the money he's offered. It's either that or you'll be put off with nothing in your pockets but lint.
Voss grinned, an expression that lacked any hint of mirth.
You leave my mom alone!
Shut your yap, kid, else I'll take you over this saddle and lay my quirt across your backside.
Leave my sons alone!
Matt stood up in the back of the wagon. He was smiling, but there was no more friendliness in his expression than there had been in Voss's.
Who are you?
Just a passing stranger.
Then you keep on passing, mister. You got no dog in this hunt, so don't be foolish and get yourself all busted up for nothing.
Or worse, you push us and you get yourself shot down dead.
I never did have much sense.
What's that mean?
Means that I decline your advice.
Huh?
I'm stepping in on the ladies' side of things. Now turn around like good little fellas and go tell your boss that Ms. Ma'am, forgive me for being bold, but what may I say your name is?
Borden. Delia Borden.
Thank you, ma'am.
Your name is Mud. That's who you are. And you are a dead man, or soon fixing to be.
Excuse me, ma'am. but would you mind driving over there out of the way, please?
Matt hopped down to the surer footing of the ground, leaving his gear in the back of the buckboard. He did not know how these horses might react to the sound of gunfire and did not want to worry about keeping his footing in the back of a moving wagon while there was lead flying around.
Now, boys, let's us three discuss this situation.
You got one last chance, mister. This ain't your fight. Turn and walk away now while you can.
Voss nodded to his partner, and Trudell tossed his reins to the larger man and dismounted.
Last chance, mister. This here's James Trudell. He's the fastest gun there is, and if you don't leave me, he's gonna show you how fast he is.
I appreciate the advice. Now I will return the courtesy, and my advice to you would be to leave that lady alone. The both of you and your boss, leave her be. Permanent.
The only thing permanent will be the marker we put over your grave. What name do you want carved on it?
Bodine. Matt Bodine.
If
you aren't going to draw a friend, I suggest you unbuckle and drop him. Just to make sure there is no misunderstanding. I just hate mistakes, don't you?
Trudell bent over and began frantically digging at the thin strap that held his holster tight to his thigh. He managed to get it off, then undid the belt buckle and let the whole affair fall into the dirt. He held his hands wide from his body and backed two paces away.
Jimmy, what's the matter with you? Why'd you go and do a thing like that?
You never heard of Bodine and Two Wolves? Well, I have. I ain't dumb enough to fool with them.
Matt gestured toward a well that stood in the shade of the livery.
Let's all of us walk over there, shall we? Mr. Voss, you can come down off that horse, please, or drag iron, I don't much care which.
Voss looked confused.
Ben, get down, will you?
Voss rather reluctantly stepped down from the saddle.
Give those horses to Mr. Trudell, please. Thank you. Now, if you would be so kind, I'd like you to drop your gun belt, too.
Voss looked at Trudell, who was still sweaty and pale.
Do it, Ben! Please!
The big man handed the reins of both horses to James Trudell, then unbuckled his gun belt and eased it to the ground.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Matt picked up both belts and carried them to the well. Without ceremony, he tossed them in, James Trudell's very expensive rig along with Ben Voss's plain one.
That seems to be one problem solved, doesn't it?
The hell it is! You're the next thing gonna go down that hole!
The big man balled his fists and lowered his head. Matt stepped quickly to the side to avoid the rush, but Voss proved to be a better fighter than Gunslinger. The big man was ready for Matt's maneuver and adjusted for it, lashing out with a roundhouse left that caught Matt on the point of his right shoulder, numbing that arm. Voss whirled and came in again. Matt danced lightly to his right. His left fist shot forward, impacting high on the side of Voss's jaw. Voss stopped and pawed at his face, shaking his head as if to clear it. Matt stepped in and hit him with the left again, high. And then, stepping forward so the two men were nose to nose, whipping a hard uppercut that snapped Voss's head back and glazed the big man's eyes. Matt threw the left again, an underhand blow to the pit of Voss's soft belly. Voss doubled over, and Matt clubbed him behind the ear, driving Voss to his knees with a trickle of blood running out of his ear.
Stop! Stop this!
Matt spun around. His right hand was still virtually useless, as feeling had not yet begun to return to his arm. But neither James Trudell nor the handsomely dressed man who was running toward them would likely know that. Matt splayed his fingers wide and pumped his right hand into fists over and over, trying to encourage feeling. Trudell was little threat with his fancy pistol rig at the bottom of the well, but the newcomer was armed.
Stop!
Watch yourself, Mr. Dwight. This is that Matt Bodine fella. He's faster than a snake with that gun, and he just whipped Ben and only used his left hand to do it.
Dwight skittered to a halt and gave his two employees a dirty look, then shifted his attention to Matt.
I want you to work for me, Bodine. I can use a man like you.
Oh, I kind of doubt that, Mr. Dwight. I kind of think you and I come down on the opposite sides of the fence here.
We don't have to.
No, but we do.
Matt nodded toward Delia Borden, who, with her boys in tow, was coming to join them now that Dwight was on the scene.
You see, Mrs. Borden and I are going into business together.
The idea caught the lady as much by surprise as it did Dwight. Both parties looked confused.
You want something that the lady here doesn't want to sell. As it happens, I already owe her a little money. So I think what I'm going to do here is get her to sell me what it is that she doesn't want you to have. And I will hire her back to run it for me.
You don't even know what it is, but you want to buy it?
Exactly. In fact, Mrs. Borden and I can walk right over there to the post office and get a bill of sale notarized and mail it off to the clerk of whatever county this is. That'll make me an official partner in the deal, and you won't be able to get hold of it or put her off it without my signature on the deal. And, mister, if you thought you were having trouble getting her to knuckle under, just wait until you try and force me into something.
I just won't...
Mister, I don't even want to know about it. But Mrs. Borden and I can discuss any propositions you might make. Maybe she would want to offer a deal where you could sort of rent whatever it is you're wanting, if it wouldn't interfere with her, and if it brought in a tidy flow of income, which she would also administer on my behalf.
Matt turned to Delia Borden.
How are we doing with this, ma'am?
He wants to own the rights to a spring on my property. I can't let it go. I depend on it to water my garden and help keep my chickens. I need that water.
But do you need all of it?
Well, no, perhaps not.
Make the lady, make me, an offer if you want to use some of that water.
I suppose I could run a cross fence that would allow my stock to drink from one side of the pond there.
What do you think that'd be worth to you?
As it is, my cattle have to walk mighty far to water. It keeps them from gaining like they should. With water close to hand, I would think I could pay $10 a month for the privilege.
20.
The added weight gains wouldn't be worth that. Could we compromise? Would she, that is to say, would you accept $15 each month?
Year round?
All right. Winter and summer alike.
Matt turned to Mrs. Borden and lifted an eyebrow.
You don't know, Mr. Bodine. You don't know what you have done for us here.
Matt looked back to Dwight.
I'd say you got yourself a deal. You can pay the first month's rent now. Mrs. Borden will be collecting it for me, you understand. And, mister, it wouldn't set well with me if I had to come back here and sort things out a second time. Like if I ever hear that you aren't living up to your end of the bargain. Do we understand each other?
I believe that we do, Bodine.
Good. Now, if you'll excuse me, sir, the lady and I have to go conduct some business so as I can get on about my own affairs.
Matt stepped over to the wide-eyed and obviously adoring little boys and guided them toward their mother's buckboard. They seemed a nice family. He wondered just how much he ought to pay them for the ride into town and for the property he seemed to be buying this afternoon. 3 days later, the proud owner of a newly acquired small farm somewhere not far from Tucson sat in a cafe eating supper, a notarized bill of sale safely executed and in the mail. He was pleased with the way it turned out. Both parties would benefit, and Dwight had clipped the wings of his overly eager employees who, he said, overstepped their authority when they decided to use physical intimidation to get what was wanted. Matt believed the man when he said that. Pretty much. That was the good news. The bad was that he still had to find a decent horse. There had only been 2 nags available at the livery stable, and neither of them looked like they would have the stamina for a trip that could prove to be hard and fast. He had bought the better of the two, but had no intention of keeping it, not 1 minute longer than it took him to find a mount with some heart and some bottom to it. Surely he could find a horse somewhere in Arizona territory, but until then, Sam was drawing farther and farther ahead. By now, he could have even reached Pete's ranch at San Iba. Matt froze in the act of picking up his coffee cup. A bolt of something, fear, anxiety, something shot through his chest and roiled his belly.
Sam.
Sam Two Wolves was in danger. Matt knew that as plain as if he were sitting beside his blood brother, instead of being in a cafe countless miles away. Matt came halfway out of his chair, Then, wincing, forced himself to sit back down again. Whatever was wrong, whatever the danger, Sam would have to face it without Matt's help. For now. Sam's lips thinned in a tight smile, and his normally stoic expression softened when he saw the ambush beside the road ahead of him. He was close to the border, although in truth, he could not have sworn exactly which side of it he was on at the moment. The roads here meandered more than a little, and there were customs tax agents and livestock inspectors stationed only in the border towns. No one bothered to patrol in the countryside. The problem with that was that it made a border a potentially unhealthy place for travelers. Some could be waylaid almost with impunity. For whichever law a victim turned to, the criminals could claim they had been in a different jurisdiction at the time of the crime. Sam had even heard that one trio of bold hold-up artists had been recognized by a victim and reported to the Mexican authorities. The crooks were duly arrested and charged. When they came to jail, they swore their attack took place on United States soil. A Mexican judge dismissed the charges in the face of that confession. The victim, not to be denied, demanded that the prisoners be turned over to U.S. civil authorities, and an exchange was made at the border crossing in the center of the town. A second trial was held, and this time the prisoners swore on a stack of Bibles that their admitted crime occurred in Mexico. And again, the charges were dismissed for lack of jurisdiction. Border justice seemed to be a thing best handled on the spot, which was what Sam intended in this case. But one would think if these boys intended to make their living by way of pillage and robbery, they would at least learn to do it right. There seemed to be two of them, and at the moment, they were talking to each other. One of them was wearing a pale yellow straw hat, and the other a snow-white felt hat. Neither one was particularly well hidden, and when they talked, they bobbed their heads. Sam could see the brims of their hats bobbing up and down, like a pair of white hens pecking corn in a barnyard. No doubt these old boys thought they were going to pull off a surprise when their latest victim came nigh.
Better luck next time.
He held his pace steady until he was almost opposite the two idiots, then hauled his reins over and gave his horse the spurs. Standing in the stirrups and flogging his horse with his hat, Sam charged straight at the pair of inept highwaymen. Sam took the reins in his teeth and drew his revolver. Even though the shots went well over their heads, both men leaped to their feet and ran. One dropped the rifle he had just been holding, but never so much as slowed his headlong flight. The other, just as terror-driven as his partner, kept falling down, crawling frantically forward on hands and knees for a few paces, jumping to his feet, and falling again. If it hadn't been so serious, it would have been hilarious. Sam chased the two for a good 40 or 50 yards before he gave up the sport and reined down to a walk. Sam returned to the road, not even bothering to go back to the ambush point to look for that fallen rifle. And somehow he doubted the weapon's owners would be going back for it either. Sam hoped whoever found it was in need of the few dollars a used rifle would bring. Sam's dark face split into a smile again as he continued on the road to San Iba. The horse was not a bad one, exactly, but it was not a good one either. The gaits were all right, but it did not have the stamina its build suggested it should have. Matt suspected it might have been windbroken when it was young. He hated to delay, but decided in the long run he would be better off taking the time to swap for a better animal. Besides, he did not feel so much urgency about Sam any longer. Whatever had happened, Sam was all right for the moment. A sign hanging slightly askew proclaimed that the ugly little mining camp Matt was approaching now was called Tombstone. It seemed a strange name, and Matt was not sure if he even wanted to hear the origins of a name like that. Still, the place was bustling with activity. Money was being made here, and that was an event that was sure to draw a crowd of folks wanting to dip their fingers into the trough. There just might be a decent horse for sale. Matt weaved his way through ore wagons and pedestrians, steered wide of a medicine wagon that had drawn a crowd, and headed for a narrow building made of laid-up mud bricks with a tattered canvas tent laid over the top of it for a roof. A sign out front read, "Eats." A steady flow of men drifted in and out. Must be good. Matt reined to a halt and stepped down from the saddle. He and the poke-along horse had been on the road for hours, and if the horse was as weary as Matt, then it needed a break. He let the animal drink from a nearby public trough, then tied it outside what was left of a small building that had burned down. Matt stretched his back and pounded a little road dust off his clothes and headed for the cafe. There were some mighty mouth-watering smells coming out of the place. Matt stopped just short of the entrance, though, and snatched his hat off, standing and staring like a moonstruck kid as a gleaming phaeton rolled past. The girl on the forward-facing seat was elegant, lovely beyond measure. She wore a tiny hat pinned at an angle above a cascade of dark, gleaming curls. There was a man in the phaeton with her, but Matt scarcely registered the fact. It was the girl who captured his attention.
Oh, excuse me.
The tall gent Bodine had just bumped into smiled.
No, it's my fault.
The two had just collided at the doorway to the cafe. Matt stepped back to allow the gentleman entry. He smiled and shook his head.
Sorry, but I expect you know why I was staring.
I was doing the same thing. Couldn't help myself.
The gent grinned and scratched somewhere deep inside his mustache.
You know, I think I might just have to marry that girl.
Just from seeing her drive past? Friend, my brother accuses me of being a romantic, but I'd say that you've got me beat all hollow.
I'm not all that easy, son. No, that there is Miss Josephine Marcus. She came to town with a troop of actors and decided to stay. The man with her is our local sheriff, Johnny Bean. She's smitten with him, but it won't last. I know Johnny, and he isn't worthy to polish her shoes, much less court her. And his intentions are not serious. I'm certain of it.
And yours are?
Oh, yes. Lady has my heart, no doubt about it.
Well, I wish you luck, friend.
Matt started for the door at the same time as the other man, and again, the two bumped into one another.
Oh, we really do have to stop meeting like this, don't you think?
I know how to resolve it. Join me for supper. Food always goes down better when you have someone to share it with. And if you're my guest, why, I must defer to you and allow you to enter before me. Isn't that so?
Matt led the way into the cafe. He stopped inside the door and let his host choose between the two empty tables, dropped his hat onto one of the unused chairs, and helped himself to a seat. Despite the place being so busy, a waiter hurried to greet them.
Good afternoon, sir.
He nodded at Matt, then turned his attention to the tall man.
Evening, Marshal.
I have my usual order, Glenn. Bring my friend whatever he wants.
Something solid. Meat and potatoes. I've been eating my own cooking lately, and I'm not fussy.
The waiter dashed away, and Matt turned his attention back to his host.
Marshal, did he say?
Just a deputy. My brother is a marshal.
He extended his hand across the table to shake.
Earp is my name. Wyatt Earp.
Matt shook the lawman's hand.
I heard of you. Used to be up in Kansas, I believe.
That's right. There's something about the desert that I've always been drawn to.
Well, pleased to meet you. I'm Matt Bodine.
I've heard your name, too. You're developing a reputation, Matthew Bodine.
It isn't something that I want, Wyatt. You know how it is.
Indeed I do. But peace can be hard to come by.
Can I ask you something?
Of course.
Were you serious about marrying that lady?
Josie? Oh, yes. Serious as can be. It's just that she doesn't know it yet, and neither does Johnny Bean. Hope there won't be bad blood between us because of it, but I intend to have the lady regardless.
Their meals came, a thick and aromatic stew served with cornbread, and Matt had a moment to look at this man who was a generous host. The most striking thing about him, apart from a clear and steady gaze, was his hands. He had a gambler's hands, with long, slender fingers and carefully pared nails. He wore a flat-crowned black hat, which lay on the seat of a chair at the moment, a black cutaway coat and vest, and a tie with a small pearl stick pin. He was a handsome man, this Wyatt Earp, approaching his middle years now, Matt wished him well in his pursuit of the much younger Josie. Had he said her name was Marcus? Matt thought so. A couple such as that would be striking indeed. It occurred to Matt that it was just as well that neither had taken offense out on the sidewalk when he and Wyatt bumped into one another. And when Matt was so openly eyeing the girl, Wyatt intended to wed. Matt had no doubt that he would have prevailed if he'd had a showdown with Earp. A man had to believe that in his gut, or he had no business strapping on a gun to begin with. But he was more than pleased that it was not necessary to prove it. He took another mouthful of stew. Goat, perhaps. Whatever it was good. Sam Two Wolves was hot when he rode into sleepy, sun-baked San Eva. He was dusty, he was tired, he needed a bath, a meal, a drink, and a haircut. And he needed to get directions to Pete Branville's ranch. But first, he needed to get all those other things tended to. It was late enough in the day that he could justify stopping now. The ranch could be many hours away, and there was no point in blundering around in the dark and country he did not know, looking for a place where he had never been. He could get a fresh start in the morning. Sam reined his horse to a halt and dismounted in front of a low, rambling barn and set of corrals that he took to be a livery or freight yard. The town was only a few blocks long, so he would be able to walk from there. A dark-haired boy who looked to be 8 or 10 came outside and stared at the lean, travel-worn stranger on his doorstep.
"Hello. I need to put my horse up for the night."
The boy stared mutely.
"English? Do you speak English?"
He made hand motions as if he were stripping the saddle off the animal, rubbing it down and feeding it. This time, the kid responded with a nod. He came forward, took the reins from Sam, and led the horse inside. Sam thought about grabbing his saddlebags and bedroll, then decided he could come back for those. They should be safe enough here. He watched the boy and horse disappear into the barn, then began a weary walk into the heart of what passed for a town here. Sam noticed that at least half the people he saw on the street were white, so his lack of Spanish should not be a problem. Obviously, this place, so close to the border, accommodated Americans. That probably influenced Pete's decision to live here. Sam stepped up onto the sidewalk in front of a two-story building with a sign advertising it as the Cattleman's Inn. The hotel was set back from the street a dozen feet or so. The distance was taken up by a low roof with some sort of flowering vines climbing up the support posts. Tables, chairs, and a few rocking chairs were set on the paving stones that served as flooring. Sam was grateful for the shade. It almost seemed cool beneath the overhang. Strings of bright beads hung from the lintel over the doorway, placed there to keep flies out. He smiled at the white man who sat behind a low counter in a corner of the broad lobby.
"Hello. I'd like a room, please, and bath water. Do you serve meals as well?"
The man looked up, his face cold and unwelcoming. He scowled at Sam, then returned his attention to some papers on the counter.
"Excuse me. I said I'll be needing a room. This is a hotel, isn't it? The sign says that it is, but I suppose I could be mistaken about something."
The man glared at him, but still refused to speak, and after a moment stood, turned pointedly away, and walked into a back room, leaving Sam alone in the hotel lobby. Mystified, Sam shook his head. He did not want to make a fuss about it, though. Everyone had a right to be as odd as he wanted, including this fellow. Sam went back outside into the stifling heat of late afternoon. There was a saloon close by where he probably could get something to eat as well as a beer to cut the dust in his throat. The saloon was built of lumber, as was the hotel. An adobe-walled cantina was in the next block. Sam assumed the cantina would cater mostly to the locals, and he might have difficulty there because of his lack of Spanish. He entered the saloon instead. A handful of customers were scattered through the room, a few at low tables and the rest standing at the bar. They wore wide-brimmed felt hats rather than straw, along with boots and spurs. Surely one of them would know where he could find Pete. Sam stepped to the bar. He removed his hat to let a little air reach his scalp, smoothed his hair back with one hand, he really did need that haircut, he realized, and resettled the hat in place. The bartender looked up.
Hello. I'd like a beer, please, and something to eat. And I'll be needing some directions, too.
You want directions? I'll give you directions. The door's over there. Use it.
Pardon me?
You heard me. This is a decent place. Your kind ain't welcome.
My kind?
You heard me. Get out of here. Now.
Mister, all I want is a drink and something to eat. That and directions to a friend's place. Is that too much to ask?
Out!
Mister, I asked you real polite. Now I'm telling you, draw that beer or I'll come over to the side of the bar and get it myself. And you won't like it when I walk all over you to do that.
One of the men standing at the other end of the bar broke into the conversation.
Do what the man says, Tim. Pour him a beer.
But...
Just do it, Tim. We don't want no trouble. If it makes you feel any better, I'll buy the beer. That way we won't be breaking any law, all right?
The bartender did not look happy about the compromise, but he nodded and drew a beer.
Thank you. But what law would it break if...
Sam was speaking to an empty space. The man who had just interceded on his behalf had already walked out of the saloon, apparently without hearing Sam's thanks. Sam shrugged. He could find the man and thank him later. Right now, he buried his nose in the foam that was threatening to overflow his mug and drank down a long, throat-cleansing swallow of the crisp, almost bitter beer. He drank that and was about to ask for a refill and some food when half a dozen uniformed Mexican soldiers pushed their way into the saloon. The soldiers carried long-barreled rifles made even longer by the gleaming bayonets that were attached. An officer, resplendent in epaulets and gold braid, followed close behind the soldiers. The officer carried a sword unsheathed in his hand. The officer gestured, and the soldiers, there were eight in the squad, Sam saw now, formed a line facing the bar. The Americans who had been drinking in the place hurriedly left, slipping out behind the soldiers. Sam was about to do the same when the soldiers first presented their arms, then turned slightly and, moving as one, snapped the rifles into position for a bayonet thrust. It was really a very pretty maneuver, although Sam would have enjoyed it even more if those bayonets were not pointed toward him.
Surrender yourself.
Me? What did I do?
The men began shuffling forward. Those bayonet tips looked wickedly sharp.
If you're gonna kill him, Antonio, take him outside first, will you? I don't want to have to clean up a bunch of blood.
Surrender!
Sam looked at the officer, then at the bayonets, then at Tim, the bartender. With a shrug, he held his hands out wide. There was nothing to be gained by a show of stupid bravado here. Under the officer's direction, two of the men set their rifles aside to come forward. They were not gentle about removing Sam's gun belt and binding his hands behind his back. When he was safely trussed, they shoved him into the center of the room so that he was surrounded by the soldiers. The officer and two of the men were behind Sam. He felt a hard, dull impact on the back of his head.
No!
After that, he neither heard nor felt a thing.